Hello, everyone. Welcome to the State Library. My name's Sam Hagen, and I coordinate all the public programs here at the Library. And I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land on which we in this Library stand, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. This event is part of celebrating our current exhibition, Planting Dreams, which is upstairs. If you haven't been yet, I encourage you to go up after the talk. It's quite beautiful. The exhibition looks at the history and cultural significance of gardens and gardening over time. We've held a lot of discussions here over the last few weeks on horticulture, landscape design, different trends in gardening, and we've noticed that a running thread through these discussions is community. People love to share their gardening knowledge and their gardens of all types and sizes. So who better, I thought, than to hear from Costa. Now, I didn't ask you how to say it. Is it Georgiadis? Yes. Costa Georgiadis, who engages so many people with his own passion for gardening. You probably all know Costa from ABC's Gardening Australia. Costa's been interested in gardens since childhood and has spent his professional life enthusiastically educating the rest of us. And I'm sure today will be no exception. So if we could welcome Costa.
Hello, everyone. How are you? Thanks for coming out on a Saturday, quite a warm Saturday actually. Spring is kind of flexing its muscles a bit today, and it's kind of nice to be outside, but it's nice to be in here as well. Thank you, Sam, for the wonderful welcome and for the acknowledgement of country. That's a wonderful detail that I've become ever closer to in my travels around the country, particularly. The experiences that I had when I was up in Yirrkala and Arnhem Land a couple of years ago, and had very much first-hand welcomes by some amazing elders, both in Katherine and also in Yirrkala. And yeah, it certainly puts a different appreciation on it for me. And I think it's really appropriate because as gardeners, and as this whole exhibition is about, it is about the earth. And I don't think there's anyone as connected to the earth as our Indigenous sisters and brothers in terms of their history. Their history is amazing. And we continue to learn more and more about the country and how they managed it, how they managed their big garden. I was really excited when Sam contacted me about this event because, you know, gardening as a word has a lot of perceptions around it. It has good perceptions, it has its baggage as well, it has its containers, and, you know, certain people containerize others. If you're a gardener, you should fit this demographic. And I want to play a little bit with that whole definition in this talk because when you look at where gardening is going from a community point of view, there are no boundaries and there are no canisters anymore. And I think a lot of that... Hello. No, don't be sorry. It's all good. Thanks for coming. I think a lot of that change in definition has come about because of a real direct and public display of gardening, be it in schools and be it out in the community context as well. But I want to mess a little bit with the definition of community gardening as well, because I think we can be contained there. And the examples I'm going to show you, I've collected sort of about 50 different examples of what I'm seeing out there on the front line of community gardening. And I'll walk you through them today. And it was kind of nice. I flicked through them today because whenever you shift photos, they always jump around on the computer and then... You go, oh, hang on, why is that one there and this one there? So I had to go through and sort of number them all. So I know exactly, they're all in order, which is great because a lot of times you do it and you put it on a PC and I'm on a Mac and it just becomes a debacle. And then you sort of tell the story like it's a Greek salad bouncing from, you know, the feta to the tomato and back. So I was really pleased. I was really pleased to be invited to this event because what really enthuses me at the moment is the role that libraries and museums are playing in education. They've always been there, but I think in many ways they've predominantly been displays. There have been somewhere you come and you look at it and it sort of tells you something and you move and then it ends. Whereas these sorts of events where there's been lots of different speakers, there's images, there's also another great event on at the moment at the Australian Museum called Alive and Deadly, which is a spider, an exhibition on spiders. Who gets a bit scared when I say the word spiders? Anyone? Yeah, a few arachnophobes in the room. Well, this again, this is an exhibition that's been 2 years in the making, and I would urge you to go and see it. It's spectacular. And I was on the radio this morning doing the gardening talk back with, well, normally it's Simon Marnie, but Ian Rogerson was on today, and he had one of the curators of the exhibition come along. But I think what my point is that, you know, in events like this, we get to engage. We get to talk to people. There's a forum. There's a lot of interaction, and that spider exhibition is all about interaction. And in many ways, what Sam and the team here have curated is interaction. And I go to council libraries, and that's where they're doing lots of things. You can do a composting workshop. You can learn about fermenting and pickling. You can learn about preserves. You can learn about all sorts of arts and crafts. And that's the space. I think, you know, there was probably a time where people thought, oh, libraries and museums, they're going to lose significance when, you know, we can have at our fingertips, you know, this sort of technology that has all this information. But it's just information. One of 300,000 hits. What does it mean? How do you filter through it? Who put those first six at the top? Were they paid for? You know, all these things. That it's not truth. It's just a numbers game. So it's a treat to see gardening and the cultural significance of gardening being presented in such a well-composed and well-curated way for interaction. And I will throw it open at the end to so that you can ask some questions and we can really engage with it, because this exhibition, you know, it goes on until mid-January. So Be conscious of that and come into some of the other talks over the Christmas break, because they're wonderful. And as it says in the opening letter, I just opened this booklet up, and it says, gardens and gardening are at the heart of our understanding of Australia. And with the 200th birthday of the Botanic Gardens, this is a very significant exhibition or engagement, let's say. It's a significant engagement. The Botanic Gardens tells a story. But then, as we said with the acknowledgement of country, there is a whole lineage of gardening that we're now starting to connect to at that level in terms of fire stick management and understanding that, you know, there's this seasonal dry, wet, dry, wet. And the dry causes heartache, but then the wet causes heartache. And then the wet is causing the next heartache, because then the grasses grow and those grasses dry out, which means that they're going to create more bushfires. So it's kind of like we live on seasons, and when we understand that and we work with it and we observe it, then we don't ride the troughs and the peaks as emotionally. We can then look at it and say, well, this is the cycles of life. This is the way of life on the garden planet that we live. And yes, it's wet and there's been major floods. And then with that comes the still water, and with that comes plants being suffocated. With that comes bzzz. You know, the mosquitoes are going to be big and happy this year. They're already flying around like drones and helicopters. And people everywhere I go are going, oh, the mozzies are bad. You know, but that's part of the cycle, you know. But we got the water, and the water got into our subterranean water tanks, our aquifers, our incredible artesian basins. You know, when you see water moving across the landscape, I think it moves when it comes down into the centre from the north. It moves at about that pace, going into cracks and the land absorbing it and literally going burp, you know, burp, burp. And along goes this water moving at, you know, 0.5 of a kilometre an hour or whatever it is. I mean, this is, we are but players. on the surface. And the more we look at it, the more we observe. I mean, I had a wonderful conversation. Someone rang up from good old Budgie Boy. He was very happy character. I rang the radio today with Garden Talkback. And, you know, Garden Talkback is a great leveller. Doesn't matter, you know. Ian was talking me up a bit and I said, mate, go easy. I said, the first phone call can pull the rug, you know, because you never know what it's going to be. And, you know, everyone's equal. I just, because I'm on the TV, doesn't mean I know more. That's for sure. And so anyway, this guy was great. He just said he'd been outside, and I'd just been talking about all this observation that we need to get out and observe. And he said how he was observing that he'd put sugarcane mulch down in his garden and all the slugs and snails were working up and down on that. All his veggie seedlings were fine, but they were walking up and down on the sugarcane mulch. And he said, well, my perception there was that the sugarcane mulch still has the carbohydrates and the sugar, and so the slugs were walking over that and getting something out of it. And I said, well, you know, and my immediate thought was, well, I want to try that out as a potential, you know, barrier, an Alcatraz. You know, put that around your veggies and see whether they go there. And if they go there and stop there, then you can pick them off, you know. And if it's snails, I give them to my chickens. Protein. Happy days. Everyone wins in the circle of life. So, you know, the whole seasonal thing, I want to preface everything about gardening on the power of the seasons, because we are at that whim. When we have a good season, we're happy. When we have a bad season, the world goes into a nosedive. When the Russian wheat crops failed a few years ago, you had serious problems in the Middle East because they didn't get their wheat. So, you know, gardens and growing and horticulture basically keeps the world happy, or it creates problems because we have to eat. And we're only as competent and as confident in any type of negotiation, thinking, planning as our last meal. We go without a meal, the competence and the confidence starts to drop. If we go without two meals, we go without three meals. And you know what happens when, you know, the supermarkets don't get stocked these days? Within 24 hours, people are in a panic. So, you know, the role of gardens, gardening, farms, farming, market gardens, plants, horticulture, it underpins everything from mood to health to cultural fabric and political stabilities. It's really, you know, that side of it is very exciting for me, because that's exactly what community is about. And community is about aperture. We've got a world community, we've got a planetary community, we've got an ecological community, we've got a national community, that we've got regional, state, local, family. And that's kind of what I want to talk about today. So the topic was how Australian communities are creating new ways to connect around gardens and gardening. What does that look like today? What are the benefits that individuals are taking from this? How are communities benefiting from new ways of connecting with gardens? What is the future? What's the significance? Does it have a significance? And, you know, what does this rise in sustainability and sustainable design? What does all of this paint to our future? So that's really what I want to... That's kind of the basis of my talk. And I suppose I validate what I'm going to talk about by saying my life is predominantly spent travelling the country, and the examples that I'm going to show you are very current. They're things that I saw as recent as this week that I've put up there. There's examples from all over the country, and they're examples that are being replicated. So when I talk about, say, for example, Pocket City Farms here in Camperdown, there's equivalent styles of things going on in Perth at the moment, and other ones taking off and building through an organisation like 3,000 Acres in Melbourne, which is all about their goal being to have 3,000 acres of community gardens in Melbourne. And that wasn't like a 3,000-acre farm. It's 3,000 acres made up of, you know, a little corner here, a little nature strip there, a rooftop there, a building block awaiting DA here. And these things are happening. And if I had to say what's the pulse, how do I feel about the pulse, I feel incredibly excited. There is so much good going on. Most of it doesn't make the mainstream media. So it's kind of nice to be able to come and talk to you about it, because it might make the local paper, but you know how the mainstream media works. It's got to have a sting in the tail and hopefully a hook to bring back another story. But if it doesn't have that, if it's just feel good, it's kind of all a bit bland, yeah, which is kind of strange. And you know, you only need to look at what's been going on in the current status quo internationally, and you know, it's kind of like, oh, we've got to change. You know, everything's got to turn over quick. 24 hours, news cycle, dum. What's this person doing? What'd they eat? What's their strategy? What's their pollen? And look at what's going on. I mean, it's crazy, but it doesn't change the fact that the tide at Bondi is still going to come in plus or minus 3/4 of an hour from what it was yesterday, right? You know, and the wonderful pots that they've put in the water alongside the seawall here at the Botanic Gardens, they've put these terracotta pots as a way of providing habitat for all of the creatures and the plants that would normally live in the rock pools. Well, once they built a big wall, there was no rock pool. So Sydney University's been doing that. Now, that's a garden. That's a garden in the sea. But it's a garden in the sea in front of the Botanic Gardens. So you know, I want to mess with you a little bit. I want to talk to you about gardens of all different shapes and sizes. And that's exciting. You know, for me, that is incredibly exciting, because there's career pathways there. There's wonderful opportunities for youth to get into science and to see gardening of the ocean, as a very valuable career and one that we need to manage. You know, who saw the recent article on Four Corners about industrial farming of salmon? You know, I mean, effectively, it would be like, well, if you took a chicken, a big industrial chicken house, and just put it on the water, well, that's basically the same. But the chicken house has a lot of controls on it, and all the runoff has to be captured and whatever. In that case, this big factory net just sits there, 30,000 tons of food goes into it, and then it just washes out into the ocean. And then, you know, there's colouring of the fish to make it sell. No one even really knows what the ingredients are, what they feed. So, you know, these are responsibilities we need to know about, because they're affecting our garden. When it affects the ocean, the temperature of the ocean affects the land, and you know, this big feedback mechanism is at play on everything we do. We are accountable everywhere we go. That's a good segue. Just I always like to have a few gifts, and look, normally I have this wonderful trowel. Now, believe it or not, this is a trowel made in Windsor. It's cast steel, one piece, no wooden handle, just cast steel. It will last, it will outlast all of us and all of your grandkids and all of your kids and all of your kids. Normally I have those, but I've given a whole box away in the last 3 weeks. I don't know how. I usually take two and then I give six away. So this is not, by any stretch of the imagination, a downgrade of the gifts. Even though you may think on face value that it is. But I have, I'll start with something that's not as, so I have a lovely foxtail grass. I will ask questions at the end, and whoever answers the question could win a foxtail grass. If someone is rapidly fast fire, they could win a nice organic apple that I got when I was driving back from the Millthorpe Garden Ramble last weekend. I've polished it as well. It's ready to eat. I noticed in the mail the December issue of the Gardening Australia magazine came out this week, and lo and behold, look who's on the front. We have the bearded anti-claws. So that's the first one. That's actually the copy that was sent to me, so I'm giving that away. And it's National Recycling Week, so I couldn't think of a better gift than some recycled toilet paper. The paper's recycled. It's not paper that's been used and then recycled. So don't be too alarmed. But I couldn't have been happier yesterday when I drive off. Something caught my eyes. I was driving past the house and I saw the box. And I thought, how good's life when you get super excited and almost crash the car when you realise that 96 rolls of beautiful recycled toilet paper has landed. And these two that you got, I got a box that they've done with their sort of different, because normally it's just plain wrapping, but they've done sort of some Christmas fun ones. So two lucky people will be wiping away the woes of Christmas happily. Oh, yeah. Oh, and the name of the toilet paper is, I'll get someone to say it.
Who gives a crap?
So, yeah, you can look them up. Why do I do that? This is, you buy it in a box. It's wrapped in paper. It's not wrapped in plastic. And it's not chopping down new trees. It's using, because we need outlets if we're going to recycle. We've got to reuse this paper. So, the profits go to creating toilets for people around the world, proper toilets, composting toilets and things like that. So, but yeah, that's a little bit of a, just a G up, just to keep you here in case you sort of 15 minutes in, you're going, oh God, I've had enough. It's a bit an old school, isn't it? You know, just, you'll stay in the classroom until you have a crack at the gift. Yeah, yeah. That's the ultimate test, you know. If I'm giving you toilet paper, will they stay? So, gardens. By way of background, I grew up with a grandfather who was a market gardener. I took my first steps on my godfather's property in the Bylong Valley near Mudgee and Ryleston in New South Wales. So that connected me with the ground. That connected me with the earth. That's really where it begins for me, through my grandfather and my godfather. And it's interesting how, as your life goes on, you realise how instrumental those early days are. And I suppose I say to people, you know, when we look at ways of connecting, I reflect to everyone, don't underestimate the fact that you're a role model every time you do something. So if you've got a street garden, you're a role model. If you bring your own pickles or preserves, you're a role model because you can show and express that. And that, to me, is how more people are connecting to gardens and gardening, because they want to know more about sustainable design. They want to know more about a safe and sustainable future. They understand that labels generally don't mean very much. People have access to a lot more information these days, and because they have access to more information, they want to check it out. What does fragrance mean? Made from local and imported ingredients. It just doesn't cut the mustard anymore. You know, and look at these examples. There's the tuna example that I just talked about. You know, it doesn't say coloured to make it look nice. It doesn't say that. It's just like, you know, the big blueberry scare that happened last year. You know, it says, oh, my product of Australia and New Zealand, but the blueberries were grown in South America, transported to Asia, then taken down to New Zealand, put in a cardboard box with the image of an elder, and said, you know, these are, you know, oh, this is a home brand that we all know. And, you know, as you prepare the little smoothie for your grandson or your nephew or your neighbour or your work colleague, just make sure you include to them, oh, there's a side serve of HEPA. And you know, and it doesn't say that it was grown by people and harvested by people that weren't paid barely anything, you know. So people want to know more, and that's the bit that's exciting. Not the people that got sick, not what's going on in the growing of certain things. It's the fact that that information can come out now, and we can be very active about our information. And I really like that. I really love that because, you know, people want to know, they want to grow, they want information. You know, oh, you know, if I've got some pots, can I grow in containers? You know, this is, you know, more people are living in smaller quarters. You know, the traditional big backyard that had the path out to the hills hoist and had a little shed, and behind the shed there was a little vegetable patch. That's how it was in most backyards up until, you know, only a few decades ago. And then the consumption and convenience culture came in and it just said, well, you know, we'll do all that for you. You just come to this one super marketing venue and we will market at you everything that you need. And as a consequence, people let go of those skills and they said, oh, well, I can buy it there and it's cheaper. But it's only now that we're realizing that our connection to gardening is not just about cheap produce. It's not just about the cost of produce. It's actually all about the therapeutic side. And for me, I think the big future, the huge community future for gardening is the therapeutic side. Therapeutic gardening. There's groups. There was a conference here in Oatley just last month. There's more gardens in hospitals. We're looking at ways to use horticultural therapy as a way of bringing vitality and peace and balance back into people's lives. And gardens do it. Who goes into the garden and just suddenly comes back in 2 hours later and you're just going down to, I don't know, maybe pick a couple of tomatoes or just check on the chickens or, you know, whatever it is. But suddenly the time goes. And that's where people used to spend a lot of time. So I suppose what I like about it is what did it look like in the past? What's that cultural connection to gardening in the past? It was a place where people spent time. I remember my grandparents, whenever they'd got visitors, they'd always do a walk through the garden and be doing these ones. So they knew how to do cuttings because they just did it. You know, they didn't have necessarily a horticultural diploma or a Cert 3 or a Cert 4 or a landscape architecture degree or a whatever. They lived a very close connection to the garden. And I think, and it's really nice, I think it's not coming back as a fad. It's coming back as the end. It's coming back as the end game. People are realizing that they're running around like blue bottom flies in search of sort of something, and they're not getting it. And what they're actually finding is they're getting more satisfaction out of the community project, the community garden, going down, making their verge garden on the street. And guess what happens when you stand on the street near your plants? Anyone? Yeah. People talk. Shock, horror. You know? And that's actually therapeutic. You actually then feel part of a place. And when you feel part of a place, you create this sense of we used to, when I learned landscape architecture, when I was studying landscape architecture, there's specific definition, a genus loci, a sense of place. And I remember seeing in the 1980s that the communal space in my street changed, because as a kid there was low picket fences and you could see the building line of the houses and there was gardens and things, and you knew because you'd see people at the windows and see them in their garden, in their front yard, in their living room, on their balcony. But in 1980, the first high fence went up, the first one, which was a fence to the boundary. And that had a dramatic effect on the garden life of the street, because then the second one happened, and then the third and the fourth. Now, 25 years later, the street is a canyon of garage doors. And that whole thing that you mentioned about stopping and people saying hello, I whack my zapper from, I live at, you know, you live at house 24, I whack the zapper at number 5, and by the time I swing into the driveway, the door's up, boom, and basically to community, in a sense, what that's done to street community, as the door goes down, the finger goes up. You know, it's like all over. You know, and then alarms, And, you know, and what happens when the alarm goes off? No one gives a fat rat's, because they sort of go, well, I don't even know the house. I can't see anything. The alarm goes off for hours. There could be someone behind there. You know, it just lost it. Whereas I used to know every person in our street, every single person. And now, well, now that's changing, because I started a project. I started a verge garden. And it's amazing what a verge garden can do to change community connection. First time, people might walk past and be bothered by the fact that there's buckets there. And then the second time, they sort of drop a little bit of the theatre. And then the third time, if you say hello, they'll say hello. And then the fourth time, they might say, oh, gee, it's growing well. And you say, here, try a tomato. And the fifth time, they stop and instigate the conversation themselves. So it's incredible what is there. And I'm seeing it be resuscitated in lots of different ways. And for me, I think I'll start with some of the slides now and just give you a bit of an idea of where these things are happening and how communities really are creating new ways. And the aperture of these is all a little bit different. But I hope you'll appreciate that the aperture may vary, but the bottom line result is the same. It's building community. And by definition of community, that could be your family. It could be your streetscape community. It could be your place of study. It could be your place of work. It could be a commercial precinct. It could be a high school. There's lots of different ones, and I think I'll go through and start to show you some of these. Any questions up to now on that kind of take of on things? What about the dogs? Yeah, that's a good question. There's ways around that. I've planted a vetiver grass border. And vetiver grass grows very straight, high. It looks like lemongrass, but grows straight. Has roots that go straight down to the ground, and mats. Prevents any animal from cutting across. But in saying that, not every verge garden needs to necessarily be edible food. Because when we talk about food, we talk about the future, we talk about feeding the ecosystem, we talk about biodiversity, we talk about creating corridors that provide the habitat for native bees, for loner bees, for wasps, for hoverflies, for local small birds, for microbats. We can play an integral role, and I'm going to show you a project that brings tears to my eyes about what we can do in such a short time. And they've done it. 4 years. Wait till you see this one. Warralili in Geelong. Okay, look at this. This is my street in North Bondi. That was like in the 70s. But now you couldn't see down the street. If I stood on my balcony there and looked out, you wouldn't even see beyond our back fence there. Yeah, it's amazing. But that was a classic streetscape. But there's so much real estate there. And so I started a project where I created a verge garden. So as you can see, I've got 4 metres wide by 38 metres long, and then there's another metre and a bit on this side, 1.2. So it's about 170, 180 square metres of land in Bondi. Hello? Go and buy 180 square metres of land in Bondi, and it's available, ready for growing. So it's a brilliant opportunity. You know, but we went to town because this was part of a whole ongoing segment for the show, which I wanted to do. And you know, here, so this is the main road up here. And so beyond the bottle brush towards the road, that's all native habitat. I planted a whole lot of native plants from the back of the car up. But this side, this is a herb maze that, you know, people are looking at gardens and gardening with. Just changing the vocabulary can change the attention and create engagement, which is really exciting. So we created a biodiversity walk and an Anzac walk, like a memorial walk. So we planted certain rosemaries, we planted a Eucalyptus carimbia, which is the red flame, and we did something with this space. And, you know, look, fun. People were loving it. That was otherwise filled with papers and rubbish, and suddenly we turned it into a space of significance. This is the vetiver grass that I was talking about. You can see how strong it is. It grows a strong hedge, and all of that trimmings just goes straight back on as mulch. That's perfect, what they call chop and drop. This is that real edge between guerrilla gardening and non-intimidating Trojan horse change making. Say that to the council officer. I'm a non-intimidating Trojan horse change maker, sir. I think that would be a cool thing to say. Okay, so from there, when we talk about projects, Bingara. So here they said, we want to plant fruit trees on our streets. And so they did. And for the last 50 years, every year they have a ceremony when the oranges are ready and they close the streets and the schools gather on the main street. The mayor comes, all the councillors at the war memorial, they play the last post, the kids sing. Community, ceremony, aspiration. These are those things that get folded into the garden in a real Trojan way, because we're not saying, oh, we want you to be aspiring young gardeners. No, you're going to get a bag full of oranges. Yeah, we're going to be there, right? And so you had kids, they're all there, and then they finished the ceremony and said, right, go. And boom, they started. Like, and when I walked up the street, any travellers going through, if you so much as put a finger on it, there will be a community alarm go off and the wrath of Bingara will come down on you. And the stink bugs, any stink bugs will just jump on you and urinate in your eyes, and you will never think about taking one of those oranges. Unbelievable! Look at the oranges. They were dripping, right? Dripping with oranges. It was the best ceremony. It's one of my highlights of the year. Oranges. They were all picked in about 40 minutes. And you know, we talk about the power of region. You know, regional towns. We need significant things. We need process. We need aspiration in our rural towns. How do we do it? We get it back there by growing and getting the community involved. I suppose you saw that article on the ABC earlier this week where they're taking immigrants out to country towns. You know, like, hello. You know, the closure of a school is a very sad day because it'll never open again, you know. So how good, you know, and this was one or two people said, no, we're not going to let our school close. And that's another whole discussion. So, yeah, Bingara, street trees can turn into something. Now, this project, hold the phone. Are you sitting down? Yes. This is, it's kind of funny, every project I show you, I'm going to say, this is my favourite one of the year. You go, gee, you got 50 favourites. This one, it seems to be all the bees, Bingara to Budrum. Budrum. Unbelievable. These people started this project. They said, we're going to start these street gardens. We're going to go guerrilla. We're not going to say too much. We're just going to keep it under the radar. Because, and they kept it under the radar for 4 years, right? And they waited because, I mean, people knew it was going on, but they just kept it quiet. They didn't do any media or anything. And this is it. This is what they started to do in their streets. Look at this. In this street, there's olives with cabbages growing underneath. I mean, they could run the streets off the power from those cabbages. Everyone can pick a cabbage coming home. Look at all the lettuce. Look at the rocket. Just come and pick it, right? This is community action. And these are some of the newer verges, but we'll have a look at this. Bananas. They harvested 750 kilos of bananas on that little street. And then on the other side, so these are plantains and the bananas are on the other side. Have a look at this. Kilos, tens of kilos, hundreds of kilos of bananas. They've now got two beehives as well. So everyone's in honey. And that's just using the street. And you can see how big the nature strips are there. Look at that. Oh, you want some parsley? You want to make pesto? Whoops. Look at it all. It's growing like a weed. Food for the people who live in our patch. Please do not pick me until I'm yellow all over. You know, that's beautiful. I mean, that's art. You know, that's street connection, street community conversation. That's a conversation. And then, okay, off to Bondi Junction. Here we have one of those traffic islands, which otherwise would, you know, if a council engineer remained in control, it would have that faux concrete stencil. Whereas Philly has taken it over. And this is where, as a community, we have to challenge the status quos moving forward. And this is what people are doing, because people are saying that the status quo would be, oh, eye lines. People could die because they're going to crash and run over people. But no, when you don't have eye lines, what do you actually do? Yeah. The more you open it up, the more people go faster. So it's kind of a real juxtaposition there. Because when you do this and there's people around and there's people having a chat and people having a conversation and Philly's there, standing there, gardening and whatever, no one goes fast. No one goes fast. Everyone goes slow. A nature strip that would otherwise have nothing growing, and she's fed the contagion right down the street. Old containers, half broken pots, beautiful sedum just growing out over the ground, and a succulent there as well. So you know, there's five different plants. Imagine if I said, "Oh, here's five different plants and a broken pot. Put it together, and next to the trunk of this tree, boom." How good's that? You walk past that. What a beautiful thing to walk past, right? Using a piece of land that would otherwise be a runway for dogs' backsides. Okay, so Lynham. Lynham was a case where that's the thing with community projects, and I say this to people all the time. We're in this wonderful transition, and I say, be patient. You have to get through hoops, but this is what it's giving us. It's, you know, it's a benefit. It's a benefit for everyone, and it takes a little bit of time. And here we have that, you know, this is the pathway to Lynham Shops. And that's the concrete spillway. But further up, and I'm not sure if I think I've got a photo, they're now ripping that concrete up, because from a garden absorption hydration point of view, this just takes the problem quickly away and dehydrates the landscape. When we slow the water down and keep the rain where it falls, we rehydrate the landscape. This is critical to gardening. So it's wonderful that these things are happening. But you now have water in the landscape. That creates hydration. Hydration grows trees. Trees create microclimate. Microclimate create passive solar opportunities to cool houses without electricity. So the garden is critical to the future benefits and the future sustainability of any suburb. This is really, the Lynham Commons is one thing, the food forest is one thing, but look at then what you can do in this corridor, instead of it being grass and then a concrete channel, and people going, oh, it's dangerous, suddenly, look at this biodiversity. You should have seen all the little finches running around in these acacias, just feeding and having a happy day. You know, like the opportunities are just mega. And there you have your say on the proposed Lynham food forest. You know, these are exciting times. It's out there. It's the community saying, come on, one leader, one person saying, let's do it, and then people getting behind and putting it in the face of the representatives and saying, this is what we want. Pocket City Farm, the old Marrickville Bowling Club, two bowling greens, huge amount of land, ready to go. They've turned the bowling club, refurbed the bowling club into a wonderful restaurant called Acres, and they buy greens and produce off the farm, and this is the bowling green. This is exciting stuff. We did a story on it. If you want to see the story, just go on the Gardening Australia website and type in Pocket City and you can watch the story. And this was early days. This was just when it opened. And look, it's right there opposite the Chesty Bonds factory, just there off Parramatta Road. Brilliant, brilliant project. And there's ones like it in Melbourne and, so, you know, common room, pavilion, demonstration garden, yoga by the farm, workshops. You know, this is that community element that the garden can bring. So non-intimidating, so inclusive. You're a foodie? Yep, come and learn how to cook and preserve. You're a yogi? Come and do your yoga out on the garden. You know, if you're a gardener, come and do a workshop on how to make a wicking bed and how to grow compost and how to make a worm farm, how to do cuttings. You know, it's this incredibly subtle community-based education opportunity. Rain gardens, gardens that we can drive to have implemented in our communities to stop runoff. We want the water to stay where it is and hydrate our landscapes and keep our suburb cool. And this is a way of doing it. This is a sunken pit, and the water, the curb would otherwise have run down here. Now it goes out there, the water sits in there, the plants take up nutrients and helps keep the water clean. So that's the diversion. It goes in here, slows down the peak flow. Really beneficial. The exciting part about that, we've come up with details where instead of using sand, we use compost. And the compost strips all the hydrocarbons and the oils and the pollution. And imagine if we're using the compost that you put in your green bin of your garden waste, and it goes into every street drain, and every street drain going onto the harbour, to the beach, to the creeks, to the rivers, to the lakes, has a compost drain. We'll clean up our oceans like that. This is, you might have seen this around your place. This is like a container garden. It's a big container, and it's just placed like in a parking spot. And, you know, it can provide community space within a town centre. And they've just opened another one. Problem with these ones is you have to shift them with a big crane truck, and it costs about $1,000 each time because you've got to have the lollipop people and all that. I just launched a thing last Sunday, and it'll be in Glebe, and instead it's on a box trailer. And it's the same sort of thing. And with a box trailer, anyone can move it. And you just move it and put it in front of this business, put it in front of that business, run a little workshop on a Saturday from it. It's called a pocket park, a little mobile pocket park. Really exciting. This is a top of the steps at TAFE here in Ultimo. We built a garden for the cooking students, all wicking beds. So again, this is the TAFE community. And the amazing thing about this, it's on the front steps of TAFE, and the impact that's had on the whole TAFE community, because everyone stops, everyone talks, everyone says, oh, you know, blah, 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 oh, I used to grow this, my grandmother that, my blah, blah, blah. They've had an amazing response from this garden that we built. There's the bed. We put green manure crop in just to get the soil alive. Now, this is lemongrass, turmeric, ginger in the bottom one. That was broad beans. That was green manure. We put mobile worm farms in there. And then this was the harvest, our first harvest a few weeks ago, and the students coming and using it in garnishes and so on. You know, and that was a dead space. Yet the garden has created such a zest and energy and talk around the whole TAFE. Then the TAFE at Ryde has gone ahead, and they've created a kitchen garden between the cooking school and the School of Hort. Could there be anything better? From a community point of view, gardened gourmet is what they called it. Wonderful to see these sorts of projects going on. Look at that. And it was built by the construction students. Like, you know, that's bringing multiple communities together around the garden. How else are gardens playing in a role? Well, farmers markets play into all of this because the farmers markets connects people to the growers. And they can learn little details and get hints, but then start to buy food that they know who's grown it. So it all plays a part. This is in Warwick Nabil in the Wimmera out in Western Victoria. And this is an empty building block in the heart of town. And on a Saturday, they have a grower's market and a share market. And that's the block, see, between the two buildings. And they've created a community garden there. Off the back of geniuses like this. And there's champions in community that drive gardens and drive growing. He is unbelievable. This was at Horsham West. We built a thyme garden, 23 different varieties of thyme. You know, this is where the garden consciousness is eking its way through school gardens. In Cairns, they're building a community garden in an area, you know, which has had its problems. And the locals are jumping aboard, and this has all been made out of recycled pallets. And these are all native root crops that most people would never have heard of, yams and different bush yams. This is the Wuchopperen Health Service, the Indigenous Health Service in Cairns. They've built a therapeutic and edible bush tucker garden right at the entry, again at the entry. And all of us, and the elders came, and now everyone that walks in there can hear the story of bush medicine and bush foods. And such interesting information that, you know, this is amazing information. That stuff blows me away. And this was at the launch of that. And there was a smoking. This is a community nursery in Lithgow that's working with the Work for the Dole scheme to grow local Indigenous plants. Again, this story of Indigenous sort of local plants, but then volunteers and also Work for the Dole opportunities, so we can bring lots of groups in, and that's what this community's this community aspect of gardening is doing. Has anyone heard of Rydal? Rydal. Yeah, the Daffodil Festival. These events are critical to gardening. They have open gardens during the Daffodil Festival. I was just at Millthorpe for their garden ramble. I was in Griffith 4 weeks ago for their garden festival, which I'll show you. This is the launch of the Daffodil Festival. Have you ever stood in a field of 70,000 daffodils? It doesn't matter how bad you feel good. You can't be angry. That makes you happy. How good's this for art? This is in Goa. Now, this sculpture, when it blows in the wind, there's a lady on this side, there's a guy on the other side. That's brilliant, you know? And the art garden is a place for art. So it brings another layer of community together. Look at these wheelbarrows. And that's at a school outside Goolwa. And that was a cake they made for their 13th birthday. The Malang Community Garden. This is Frog Dreaming, wonderful land care project for kids up in Armidale. And they went for a huge walk up the mountain. The senior elder did a wonderful talk up on the mountain. Then the kids came and they're planting trees. What about ways of changing tree planting where you have these birds so that as the kids are planting the trees, they say, oh, well, that grass, I come along and eat. So we tell this story through the open space networks. And rather than, oh, just come and plant, no, come and plant, but get educated and come for a walk with the birds, but then come with a birdo and a bush naturalist to learn about why these species are important and why the spiders matter. And, you know, so there's ways that open space networks. This is at Warrawong in Wollongong, wonderful school garden, but then this is a CSA, community supported agriculture, taking over an area that was inhabited and infested by weeds and doing a box system for people to grow veggies. That's the Griffith Orange and Gardens Festival. Now this one, I'll finish with this, Warralilly. This was a dead paddock outside Geelong. The city's going to double itself. And this was a paddock with nothing in it. They started to repair the waterway and create different water catchment features, some with rushes to the edge for certain birds, others with sand edges, all these different things. And look at this. This is 4 years old, and it's between an Indigenous reserve and a Sanzar wetlands. And they've built this suburb now, and they planted these trees for habitat. We went for a walk with the birdos. Any birdos here? Now, in 4 years, there was nothing there. By the time the birdos worked from their car park, 50 metres to have the morning cup of tea before we started the walk, they'd seen eight birds, eight varieties. By the time we'd walked for an hour and a quarter, we saw 44 species of birds that had come back from nothing in 4 years. So garden groups, land care, BirdLife Australia, Take Three for the Sea, collecting waste, doing all these things. All these groups have a garden thread behind them. And look at the value of these. Suddenly you look at these trees and say, no, it's not firewood. It's 200-year-old Airbnb. That's an Airbnb for different birds. Some birds will use it in the spring. Other birds will use it in the autumn. Others will use it over the winter. This is an amazing hospitality precinct. But look up BirdLife Australia. They do amazing things, and you can get involved with their projects. Look at these trees. They're just fantastic. But, so that's a little bit of a taste of projects of different scales, different apertures, but all tapping into that key ingredient, which is our connection to food, our connection to sustainability, and above all else, our connection to community. So does anyone have a question? Yep. So the question was, what are the issues with council? Can you just start on your nature strip? Look, different councils have different policies and guidelines. Just check with them. If they don't have a policy or guideline, happy days. Just rip it up. If they do, well, you know, you might have to put in a little plan and say, this is what we want to do. If there's any problems, that's where you use this piece of equipment and spread the word. If you have a problem, Brisbane has been notorious for not letting people do it and go and rip them out. They've now, with the help of Jerry, written new policy and guidelines, and they're slowly catching up. There was a problem in Geelong where they wanted to rip a garden out, and within 2 days they had 700 comments on Facebook. I put a comment on there. I then wrote a blog about it. It was all being tweeted, including the mayor. blah, blah, blah. They had over 1,000 comments. The newspaper rang me up and said, could we use that as the basis for a newspaper article on Saturday? That was Wednesday. Thursday, the mayor came on there and said, the garden stays. So 700 comments on Facebook is the equivalent of you know, 2,000 letters. Because people, so don't hesitate to use that, but take the steps, take the other steps first. I had to work in doing my garden, putting it on national television. I couldn't be gorilla. So I had to go through all those processes. But yeah, don't be put off, because the current national momentum, councils don't want to be left behind, and they don't want negative publicity. And we don't want to hammer councils, because councils do great things, but they just have to do it with certain protocols that take time. And you have to be patient and not get angry, but just say, okay, let's work on this together, because we're all going to benefit. So I never point the finger. I just say, no, come on, let's just do this. And generally, the momentum now is onwards and upwards. Yeah, so the first one we put in place was down at Rose Bay at the ferry wharf. Because basically, the current engineering detail is that you put sand in there, because sand is a great filter. But we also have to think, it's a little bit take from here to put there. Oh, we feel good that we're putting our rain drains, but we're ripping, you know, the river up in Penrith and in Gosford to make all this sand to go in there. So to come up with an idea, and this is through CORE, the Centre for Organic Research and Education. They do International Compost Awareness Week. They came up with this design detail, put it in there, and, you know, the plan will be to encourage councils to apply this, because when you actually have compost in there, plants will grow better. When they're in sand, you're limited to certain species. So, yeah, it's it's a very exciting thing, because imagine if you can make that connection that, you know, all of your municipal green waste is coming back. It's just getting processed just here in your municipality, and then it's coming back and being put in drains to keep your beaches and your streets and your watercourses clean. That's an ultimate closed loop of sustainability. And then we can then say, well, you know, that's the same sort of thinking and systems we want to protect the reef. So we actually are a part of protecting the reef by protecting what runs off our streets. And if we just worry about our, and that's that community bit that I can't help threading through everything. If we get our backyard in order, others will follow. And if we get the details right, then others can replicate. And it's modular. You know, we did it here, you do it. You did there, yeah, you do it. And that's where it becomes not a mountain. It just becomes a molehill, because we just deal with our molehill, not, oh, we've got to save the Barrier Reef from here in Sydney. No, we have to save and work hard at what we're doing and contribute, and our systems will build momentum. And when they build momentum, you know, and the garden is the simplest and easiest place to exercise. Oh, the gifts. The gifts. Okay. I've got... thanks, everyone.